Welcome to another episode of the Criminal Law Department Presents podcast, a production of the Criminal Law Department at the Judge Advocate General's Legal Center and School in Charlottesville, Virginia. Every 2 weeks, we release a new episode. Today, we're going to have a conversation about a recent opinion from the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces. Please note that these episodes may contain facts and circumstances surrounding criminal trials. Listener discretion is advised.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable United States Court of Appeals of the Armed Forces is now open and in session. God save the United States of America in this honorable court.
To Criminal Law Department Presents, Caf Schatz and Major Lynn Rivera, and I'm today joined by
Major Allie Montgomery. It's great to be here with you today, Lynn.
Same, Allie. Today we're digging into United States v. Batres, a recent Caf decision that analyzes whether multiple offenses constituted the same transaction for purpose of RCM 1002D2B1.
Exactly. And this case matters for anybody who touches sentencing, trial counsel, defense counsel, and even our military judges. It clarifies what transaction means in the sentencing context and shows how appellate courts will check consecutive sentencing when the law mandates concurrency.
And with that background in mind, let's dive into the procedural history and facts of this case. What happened at the trial level?
Well, this case began with a general court-martial. The appellant, Private Batres, was charged with three specifications of Article 120 sexual assault and one specification of battery under Article 128 UCMJ. And sometimes the facts don't matter so much, but here they do. The charges originated after the appellant met the victim in line at Walmart, and the pair began a consensual sexual relationship that very night. Throughout the course of the night, appellant and the victim engaged in consensual sexual activity at several occasions. As the pair was engaging in their final consensual encounter, that's when things took a turn.
And what happened?
So while Batres and the victim were having sex against a car, Specialist PN, who was a friend of Batres, walked over to the car. And it's at this point that appellant invites Specialist PN to join in his sexual activity with the victim. The victim says on multiple times, "I did not ask for this. I didn't agree to this." But no matter what, Batres grabbed the victim's face and told her to shut up. Batres then pushed the victim's head toward Specialist PN's penis and told her to take it. Specialist PN's penis penetrated the victim's mouth, and after that, appellant and Specialist PN pushed the victim inside of the car, and Specialist PN penetrated the victim's vulva with his penis until he ejaculated. Despite the victim again giving evidence of non-consent, saying things like, "This isn't what I wanted." The victim then began to cry and repeating over and over again that she didn't want this. And so it's after that that eventually Batres and Specialist PN call 911 and they actually report themselves to the police.
And Ali, how does the case turn out at trial?
So at trial, Batres faced charges under Article 120 for three separate acts. First, for penetrating the victim's vulva with his own penis. Second, for penetrating the victim's mouth with Specialist PN's penis. And finally, for penetrating the victim's vulva with Specialist PN's penis. And then we have the battery under 128 for grabbing the victim's face. An enlisted panel convicted Batres of two of the specifications of sexual assault related to Batres penetrating the victim's vulva himself and for penetrating the victim's mouth with Specialist PN's penis. And they also convicted him of the assault consummated by a battery.
So there's a conviction obtained at trial, and what happened at sentencing, because I think that's what we're here for, right?
That's
right. Just to talk about the sentencing process.
So here, the military judge is the one issuing the sentence, and he adjudged 20 months of confinement per sexual assault specification, and then 6 months for the assault consummated by a battery. The judge ordered all three terms to run consecutively, that is, one right after another, for a total of 46 months of confinement.
No, that's interesting, right? Because oftentimes we see that the terms will be running concurrently, which is what we're used to. So it's one of those cases where you see it consecutively, but at least one of those things that some people maybe haven't experienced, or maybe they're not well-versed on some of the consequences of that. Did either party raise a concern with the term running consecutively?
No. So after the judge announced sentence, neither the defense nor the government raised a concern about that consecutive sentencing. And the defense not only didn't raise a concern, but they didn't object to the sentences running concurrently. So, Lynn, what happened when the case went to the Army Court of Criminal Appeals?
On appeal to ACCA, the court specified the question of whether the appellant's offenses involved the same victim on the same act or transaction under RCM 1002D2B1, which will require the sentence to run concurrently rather than consecutively. The ACCA panel issued a split decision, finding that the trial judge did not err and affirmed the findings and sentence. Ali, what issue did CAF grant review of?
So the granted issue at CAF was whether Botrus's offenses involved the same victim and the same transaction under RCM 1002D2B1, such that the military judge erred in ordering his segmented sentences to run consecutively instead of concurrently. So Lynn, how did CAF analyze this case?
The CAF began their analysis by outlining the standard of review. Remember that if we're talking about a review of the law or an interpretation of the rules, in this case, like the RCM, that's going to be a question of law that the court is going to review de novo, right? And because the defense did not object at trial, this issue was forfeited, so the court reviewed the military judge's decision on that issue for plain error. For Batras to prevail on this non-constitutional forfeited issue, he must demonstrate that, number one, there was an error, number two, that the error was plain or obvious, and number three, that the error was materially prejudicial to the appellant.
Before getting into the granted issue, CAF discusses the historic shift that occurred in 2016 when Congress amended Article 56 of the UCMJ. And this amendment introduced segmented sentencing to the military justice system and required military judges to specify a term of confinement for each offense and then also specify whether those terms would run consecutively, one right after the other, or concurrently at the same time.
That's correct, Ali. And I want to point out, I think there's the wave of these cases post-2016 that we're starting to see trickling through CAF right now, dealing with consequences on the sentencing and also the segmented sentencing, because we cover USB lease, which is also dealing to do a little bit with some of the sentencing stuff and the consequences of just going from unitary sentencing to segmented sentencing. So this is another one of those cases. Now, as you were saying, so that statutory amendment led to the president to amend RCM 1002 to provide specific guidance about when segmented sentences should run concurrently or consecutively. Was that guidance applicable in this case?
Right. So the version of RCM 1002 that governed Botrus's sentencing specified that terms of confinement for two or more specifications shall run concurrently when each specification involved the same victim and the same act or transaction. And here, because all of the offenses involved the same victim and different acts, the heart of CAF's analysis boiled down to whether the specifications involved the same transaction. And so in order to answer that question, CAF looked at the related doctrines of multiplicity and unreasonable multiplication of charges.
Ali, that's one of our favorite topics. We keep going back to multiplicity and UMC, so let's try to break that down. Here, CAF explained that RCM 1002D2B is just not a codification of the constitutional protection against double jeopardy. Instead, they reasoned that the RCM is an exercise of the president's discretionary authority to ensure that the charges and specifications do not unduly exaggerate an accused punitive exposure. That's going to be separate from the doctrines of multiplicity and unreasonable multiplication of charges. Basically, what that means is that the MCM imposes multiple limitations on an accused maximum potential criminal exposure. And at the end of the day, these doctrines can overlap. So you can have several things happening at the same time.
You can. And, you know, CAF acknowledges that because there's these overlapping protections, it can be confusing for military justice practitioners. And, you know, all of these are to the benefit of the accused. So CAF wants to help us better understand that by acknowledging both the confusing nature and the fact that there are overlapping doctrines at play. So CAF narrows the focus in this case on the meaning of the word transaction in RCM 1002 D2B. And Lynn, does CAF agree with the ACCA on the meaning of the word transaction?
No, at least not on the meaning of the word transaction, although CAF agree with most of ACCA's analysis in the review of the case. CAF departs when it comes to the definition of transaction. Ali, I want to ask you this. Why do you think CAF has a different take on that definition, and how did they parse that out?
Well, it really boils down to United States versus Baker. And the departure came from CAF's evaluation of that case. So Baker is a 1983 Court of Military Appeals decision. And Baker was a case that examined the doctrine of unreasonable multiplication of charges and analyzed the same word, transaction, determining that transaction is generally construed to embrace a series of occurrences or an aggregate of acts which are logically related to a single course of criminal conduct. How did CAF incorporate this case, this Baker case, into its analysis, Lynn?
CAF looked at what happened after Baker, explaining that after the CMA decided Baker, that the doctrine of UMC, unreasonable multiplication of charges, was incorporated in the 1984 MCM. And the discussion of RCM 307 included language interpreted by the CMA in Baker, giving us the language we're so familiar with when confronting UMC issues, right? And that is what is substantially one transaction should not make the basis for an unreasonable multiplication of charges against one person. So having all of that into consideration, how did CAF depart from ACCA in its application of Baker?
So ACCA declined to adopt the definition of transaction from Baker, and instead they drafted a new definition only for use when analyzing RCM 1002D2B1 related to sentencing, so that transaction would have different meanings depending on where you were looking in the manual. CAF disagreed with that part of the decision and instead held that the word transaction in RCM 1002D2BI has the same meaning as the CMA defined in Baker, which is a series of occurrences or an aggregate of acts which are logically related to a single course of criminal conduct. That's what a transaction is. So, Lynn, with this decision on what transaction means, how did that affect Batras's case?
Well, here, because Batras' trial defense counsel failed to object or challenge the military judge's decision that the sentences should run concurrently, the issue was forfeited, and the issue was reviewed by CAF for plain error. Now, the plain error analysis requires CAF to determine whether the military judge erred in implicitly concluding that the specifications for which appellant was found guilty did not involve the same victim and the same act or transaction. CAF presumed without deciding that the military judge did err, but there's still a second step in that analysis. Isn't that right, Ali?
That's right. So next, for the second step, CAF must decide whether that presumed error was plain and obvious. And here, CAF decided that it wasn't for two reasons. First was because the meaning of the term transaction was an issue of first impression with related to segmented sentencing. This is the first time that this issue has come up. And second, because ACCA came to the same conclusion. So because CAF concluded that the presumed error was not plain and obvious, CAF did not determine whether the error was materially prejudicial to Batras. Ultimately, even though the military judge did err in this case, the error wasn't plain or obvious, so CAF affirmed the military judge's decision to order appellant sentences to run consecutively rather than concurrently.
And Ali, understanding the outcome in this case, what are some of the takeaways for our listeners?
Sure. So starting for our government listeners, if you are seeking consecutive segmented sentencing, then you must demonstrate that each specification involves different victims or different acts or transactions, understanding that the definition of transaction is the same definition as applied to unreasonable multiplication of charges for that analysis. And government listeners should also know that there was a period of time from August 2023 until December 2024 when there was a new version of RCM 1002D2B that excluded this language. And so if you're using the print version of the MCM, like the 2024 version that's probably on your desk, you'll notice that that language is absent. And so in December 2024, through an executive order, it's actually EO 14130, the president restored the language as analyzed in this case and again requires for concurrent sentencing the definition that we've been talking about throughout the last couple of minutes. And so if you're government counsel, you're going to want to look at what evidence demonstrates separate transactions, and you're going to want to offer that during your case, right? Are there temporal breaks? Is there a change of location? Is there some sort of intervening event or another fact that would refute the defense's assertion that this is a single course of criminal conduct? So those are all of the things for the government to consider.
And I think, Ali, I want to add that it's very important. We always talk to the students about going and getting the most updated version of the MCM, going online to the JSC webpage, right? And also pulling out as soon as an EO comes out. What we usually do, we print it out, we staple it to our old MCM. And at some point, it looks like a Frankenstein, but we make it work until we get a new revised manual. So I think from my perspective to the government and also to the defense counsel, that's something that we should do often to stay on top of the new developments.
And Lynn, do you have any recommendations for our defense listeners?
For our defense listeners, the analysis of whether multiple specifications constitute a single transaction begins the moment you receive the charge sheet. You can start by requesting a bill of particulars to figure out what is the government's theory of the case, which will translate to sentencing, and whether you have an argument for concurrent sentencing based on the misconduct comprising a single transaction. I think now that we have a well-established definition, it's going to be slightly easier. But when it comes to sentencing, you have to demonstrate to the court how multiple offenses will comprise the same transaction. Just as the government can point to time, location, and intervening acts, the defense can highlight how these facts just don't exist. Finally, you should object if the military judge issues a consecutive sentence under circumstances which you believe warrant a concurrent sentencing. This will preserve the issue on appeal and provide your client with the best chance of success after trial.
All right, Lynn, anything else to take up before we close out today?
Ali, I think that's plenty for today. Thank you so much for having me. And that's all we have in today's episode.
All right. Thanks so much for hosting me today, Lynn. We'll see you next time on CAF Chat.
See you next time.
Thanks for joining us today for another episode of the Criminal Law Department Presents podcast. If anything you heard sparked a thought, we'd love to connect with you. Your comments help us create better future content for the field or the fleet. Reach out to us on Facebook or Instagram. The information can be found in the show notes for today's episode. The views expressed in today's podcast are those of the presenters and not necessarily the Judge Advocate General's or the Department of the Army or the Department of Defense.
Thanks, counsel, for both sides. And the court will stand in recess until further order of the court.